Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Robert Swarwood Podcast. Today, I am excited to be joined by Jeremy Robinson, whose bio is extremely long. He's been an author for, God, over... How long have you been writing, Jeremy?
I don't know. I stopped keeping track. Maybe 15 years.
Maybe 15 years. But you were actually probably one of the first self-publishers out there. I mean, granted, there's a lot of self-publishers out there, but you were doing it a long time ago, and it actually got you your first major book deal.
Right. Well, the first book I self-published was The Didymus Contingency, and that was in 2005. So before ebooks were on anyone's mind and self-publishing was very unpopular and frowned upon by my fellow authors. The book did well despite everyone's prophecies of doom. And I decided to publish two more. The first one I published through Lulu.com, which is still around, but they're kind of just a middleman. So the second two, I formed my own imprint and went directly through the printer. And those two did well too. And the way Thomas Dunn found me is through the self-published books. In the same way that my agent found me, they saw me doing well online and looked up my numbers and then contacted me. So I've actually, for my agent and for Thomas Dunn, I never had to submit a book to the slush pile. I kind of skipped that whole process.
Yeah, this was back before where really, I guess, the numbers would follow you. So they would look at book scan and they would actually see like, oh, wow, you know, his sales are really impressive, especially for a self-published book. As opposed to nowadays with e-books, it's really kind of hard to tell. I mean, you can kind of tell based on a sales ranking. But besides that, it's really hard to say, you know, how much a book is selling. So, you've been with Thomas Dunn for now. How many books have you done? You've been doing the Jack Sigler books.
Yep, I did three Jack Sigler books with them, and then the fourth book I did with them was Second World, and that was a standalone novel. And I'm now doing the Jack Sigler books on my own. And I have one more hardcover coming out in the spring. That's Island 731, and then one more coming out in 2014, and that one's still untitled.
Now... You're still self-publishing, and I remember reading an interview with you somewhere, I think, where they talked about I guess, your recent self-publishing, and you had mentioned how you never really stopped self-publishing, how you've kind of been doing this from the start. And you did a really great blog post a while back, and I'll make sure to link to it on here, that you've kind of become an expert in everything. I mean, you do your cover design, and you know, you do your own ebook formatting as well, correct?
Yep, I do the ebook formatting, the website, the video trailers.
I mean, so you're basically, for like someone like me, you know, I can't really do design worth crap. So I basically hire a designer, and you know, that's where I get my cover designs, and I kind of do my own ebook formatting too, and the same thing with InDesign. And I've kind of learned that, but I mean, there are certain things I know that I have a weakness at. But I mean, you do everything.
Everything but editing.
Okay. Well, editing is awful. It's a really good idea for a writer not to do their own editing. This is true. So, I mean, you've been doing such a great job. I mean, you've had how many books have you self-published now, probably in the last, 2 years?
In the last 2 years, let me look at Amazon. Amazon says 28.
that is a lot of books. And I know in like the last 2 weeks, you've released like 5 books, it seems.
Yeah, it's 3 since October 22nd.
And one of those is Ragnarok?
Yep, that's the fourth Jack Sigler book. And then the second one was Project Nemesis. And then just yesterday was The Last Hunter Onslaught, which is the fifth and final book of that series.
My God. When do you have time to, like, sleep?
I don't really sleep, but I actually... spend less time than most people would think on all this stuff. Cause I work 9 to 5, and then spend the night with the kids. And so occasionally I'll work at night too, especially if I'm near the end of a book, but primarily I work 9 to 5 and, not on weekends. So 40 hours a week.
Now, so So Ragnarok is the fourth installment of the Jack Sigler thrillers. And you said before that you had three previous ones with Thomas Dunn, which is imprint of Macmillan, which is a major publisher, which one of the big six, which I guess now is really what, a big five? Yeah. I don't know how that's going to work. Well, yeah, especially with, what was it, is it Harper and Simon & Schuster are going to get together?
I don't know.
At some point, there's only going to be one or two big publishers and Amazon, which, by the way, I should mention, you also signed a deal with 47 North, which is one of Amazon's imprints, to do Jeremy Bishop, which apparently I should mention as well. You last year you published some novels, some horror novels under the name Jeremy Bishop, which from what I understand was completely, it was kind of like a Richard Bachman where no one knew it was you at first.
Right. Yeah, and very few people knew it was me, though I did recommend Jeremy Bishop to my fans.
And yeah, and that and the book Torment really took off. I remember you telling me, I mean, it sold like a lot of copies in like the first month. And I'm sure based on that really is kind of what got Amazon's attention, and plus just with everything else you've been doing. But so now you have the Jeremy Bishop novel coming out through 47 North, which, when is that going to be, next year?
They're republishing The Sentinel, and that will be out in March, and then the sequel to The Sentinel, The Raven, comes out in May.
All right, excellent. So, okay, so you do have a deal, and now you kind of have your foot in the door with Amazon, which I think is going to be great for you. I know, you know, I've obviously heard a lot of great things about Amazon, but, and you're doing the self-publishing, and you're also doing with Thomas Dunn. Why did you not go through Thomas Dunn with Ragnarok, if that was, you know, another installment in the Jack Sigler thrillers?
That was actually their call. I proposed two more Jack Sigler books to them. And they wanted to go with something new. And I think it's because they thought that the Jack Sigler books had kind of peaked. They didn't see as much growth as they wanted to. So they asked me to come up with some standalone ideas, which was, I gave them Second World and Island 731, and they liked both. And it turns out they were right. Second World sold twice as much as the last Jack Sigler book. So that was a good call on their part.
So staying with Thomas Dunn, now obviously you're doing a great job when self-publishing. You now have this the book deal with 47 North. Why is this something that, are you sticking with the more traditional publishing route? Or is it something that you want to kind of eventually just kind of focus on self-publishing? Because, I mean, most people know by now that there's a lot more profit in probably self-publishing. Plus, the distribution with ebooks is really kind of the same as it is with a traditional publisher. Granted, you know, not print.
Right.
So, I mean, is that something that, you know, eventually you might be kind of going away from the from the traditional publishing, or is it something that you still want to stick with?
It really depends on how the sales of all books go. I've kind of always been one to carefully consider things, and even if that makes means spending years making a transition. So I think with switching from, you know, traditional publishing to self-publishing or to Amazon, I don't want to just jump on the bandwagon and totally give up on something that has been working for me and has been improving with every book. So Second World really showed to me that my print sales are still increasing. I haven't reached, you know, a pinnacle of print sales for me, and there's still a print audience that I haven't reached yet. So for me, it's really about reaching the maximum audience. And I think I can do that best by self-publishing, putting out books that are more experimental, publishing with Amazon, who can reach their audience better than anyone else, and then having books still in hardcover for the people who still prefer that. So it's really about reaching the maximum number of people for me right now. And, you know, someday I might go with whatever works best, and someday I think print books really won't be around. So ebooks, I believe, are the future, but right now I think there's still a transition that I'd like to take advantage of.
Right. And in terms of your self-published stuff, I know you and I talked briefly before about audiobooks with the ACX program, and you've gone through that. So you've kind of done the whole independent route yourself, you know, finding the narrator and everything else. What about translations? I know the one kind of benefit of going through a traditional publisher is going to be easier than to, you know, sell to foreign markets.
Yep.
But as an independent author, it's a little bit more difficult. I mean, is this something that, you know, Scott is actually working with you? Because especially you've already have a brand and you've, you know, you've had other books with the traditional publishers as well. So you probably have those foreign publishing companies who have, you know, done your foreign editions.
Right.
Or is it something that you're like, you know, seeking out translators to kind of do it yourself?
I'm definitely not trying to hire translators right now because I know how much they cost.
They are quite pricey, yes.
And I know what sales are like for ebooks in other countries. Ebooks in other countries aren't even close to what they are here. But I think ebooks is definitely one of the things, or not ebooks, translation is one of the things that a lot of authors don't consider when leaving traditional publishing behind. Some of my foreign deals have been bigger than my U.S. deals from Thomas Dunn. So there's definitely a bonus there. And I would say if you combine foreign rights deals with what I get from Thomas Dunn, then I'm still making more money in print than I am from ebooks if you combine it like that. If you're just comparing U.S. market to U.S. market, then I make more in ebooks.
Right.
But
that's a good point.
I rarely sell foreign rights to the books I self-publish. Right. It happens, but not nearly as often. And the other thing that I think a lot of authors don't consider, or maybe aren't in the position to consider, is it's a lot easier to sell film rights for hardcovers than it is for a self-published ebook.
I have heard that too.
That's something I'm definitely interested in having happen. So
let's talk then about Project Nemesis, which the original title, I remember seeing somewhere, I think it was on Facebook, you had a mock cover and there was a different title, which I think it was very hard to pronounce. Was that kind of why you changed it?
Yep, that's exactly why. The original was Project MIGO, and it was M-A-I-G-O. And that name is still in the book. It's still the name of a character in the book. It's just not the title anymore because no one knew how to say it.
So now Project Nemesis, and I know you're very excited about this novel. What is it about this novel that you, that really kind of stands out for you?
Well, I've always been a Godzilla fan. I kind of grew up on Creature Double Feature. I don't know where you're from, but in New England, we had a Creature Double Feature, which was monster movies every Saturday morning. And so I kind of grew up with monsters, and I think that's pretty obvious through all my books, but I've never really done a Godzilla-sized monster before. They call them kaiju, which in Japanese means strange beast. So this is really my first strange beast novel where, you know, there's something that's the size that can tromp through a city. So for me, it was just a lot of fun to visit that genre and do it in the way that I write thrillers. So it's like a Jeremy Robinson thriller, but with Godzilla, which is fun, but not Godzilla.
Now, is this something that you want to then revisit as well? Is this going to become a series?
It all depends on sales. I write all of my books in a way where there could be more to it, but also in a way that they can just stand alone if I can't justify continuing it. So hopefully sales will continue the way they are and I'll get to do more of them.
So far, from what I've seen, your sales have been great. I mean, that's just from an outside perspective, but based on your sales ranking, it's really doing pretty smashing.
Yeah. I'm kind of a jerk to myself, though. I'm always pushing myself to do better, so.
That's good, though. I mean, obviously, we should all want to be pushing ourselves to do better. But I do want to talk, though, about price point for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, with self-publishing, one of the biggest benefits, I guess, or really one of the things that most self-published writers do is they have that kind of, they're able to kind of undercut major publishers in terms of price, so they can kind of they can find readers that way, or I should say readers can find them that way.
Right.
And there is a camp out there, I don't want to say their names, but they kind of have this idea where you need to price your self-published books as much as the regular published books because then it stands, you know, that it's, you want to be kind of the same.
Right.
Which doesn't, I don't really kind of see that. I kind of see, like, if you can afford to kind of, you know, give the reader a little bit of a savings and then give them more of an incentive to kind of buy your book, well, why not? But this Project Nemesis and Ragnarok, You launched that at the ebook price of, what was it, $7.99?
$7.99, which is the same price
as a mass market paperback would be.
Yeah, it would, and that's what my ebooks are selling through Thomas Dunn when the mass market paperback comes out. Thomas Dunn releases them at, I think, $13 when they first come out, which is definitely too high. And I think the reason why I considered releasing books at a higher price than I have before is because of Second World, which was released at $13 and sold something like 7,000 or 8,000 copies in the first month, which led me to the calculator. And I started doing the math, and I was kind of like, well, maybe I shouldn't release these at $3 anymore.
Right.
Yeah, so
I definitely think that the $2.99 price point has become the new 99 cent price point.
Yeah, it's kind of like the bargain bin. Almost like you never know really what you're going to get at $2.99, and I think raising the price of my books says, you know, that it's not just you know, something quick. It's not something unprofessional. It's, you know, I've kind of earned a higher price point.
Right. And it definitely, yeah, it kind of brings it across to a potential reader that there's value there. Because I think that, you know, and when we talk about ebooks, there's that whole tangible versus intangible. And just that, how the whole idea. In fact, we had even been talking about, you know, with the audiobooks and like searching for narrators. And some narrators, the same thing with like a cover designer or people who do proofreading or whatever else, other services. Some people pay or charge a lot, and some people pay or charge less. And you kind of have to wonder, well, why is this person charging less than this person? Are they not as good?
Right.
So, no, I definitely think, I definitely think it was a bold move on your part, but it seems to be working out smashing too. Because, like I said, your sales have been really great. And, God, a $7.99 price point is bringing in quite a lot per unit sold.
Yeah, it's $5.50. Which, you know, selling at $7.99 and making $5.50 a book at high numbers,
that's not too shabby.
Make me focus on self-publishing.
So, well, since we are talking about self-publishing, anything in specific you want to kind of mention? I know, like I said, I'm going to link to this one thing you had talked about in terms of, and actually recently you also did your best advice for self-publishers, but is there anything else that really sticks out that you kind of just want to reiterate?
I think it's just that self-publishers have to hold themselves to the standards that a big publisher would. I know there's kind of a lot of hate for big publishers, but they definitely know what they're doing. And I've always tried to hold like my interior design and my formatting and my covers to the same standards that a publisher would. And I think kind of that filter is what has helped me get ahead. I don't rush the books out. Even though they come out quickly, I don't rush them. I make sure that everything looks good. So they really just have to be indistinguishable from the best books that are out there, from books that people are willing to pay $25 or $30 for.
How is print sales for you, if you don't mind my asking? I mean, obviously, I'm sure ebooks are, you know, outsells them. But, I mean, is it, do you find it worthwhile?
Self-published print sales are far lower than print sales through a publisher.
Right.
What Second World, I believe, in hardcover, maybe sold 6,000 copies, which was higher than my other hardcovers. And then I think print books, when I self-publish them, might be in the hundreds.
Yeah.
And that's largely because the print sale market is still in stores.
Right. And that's what I've heard too from, like I said, another certain type of camp of self-publishers where they talk about, oh, you know, print is still important. Well, print is important if you have the distribution to be in stores.
Right. And it is possible to get that distribution or to find a small press who's willing to work with you. And that's what I did for Ragnarok. My friend Kent Holloway owns Seven Realms Publishing, who's a really small publisher. And I went to him and said, can you do the print book of Ragnarok and let me keep the ebook so I can do that myself? And that's what he agreed to do. So we actually did a trade paperback of Ragnarok and printed 2,000 copies. And it sold out of those 2,000 copies in 20-something days.
Wow.
And so it's gone back to a second printing now. So I think there are ways to do print editions and get them in stores, but you still have to play by those rules. For me, I already have a hardcover and a mass market paperback coming out from Thomas Dunn, so having a trade paperback then puts me at 3 books in stores for the year. And I don't think Barnes & Noble or any bookstore would really consider more than that from any given publisher. So I don't even attempt to take my other self-published books to Barnes & Noble, because I think, you know, 2 is enough for them.
Right.
I don't think they want all 7 of my books from this year.
Now, is there anything you want to announce? Because I know you have some announcements coming up, and I understand if you don't want to announce them. I want to give you the opportunity.
Let's see. What can I announce? Well, I can talk about what's next for the chess team, which I haven't announced anywhere else yet, but I'm just kind of waiting to stop promoting these books so I can talk about something else. But I can talk about it here.
Excellent.
There will be, in 2013, there are actually going to be 2 new chess team novels. One co-written with Sean Ellis, who has co-written with me on 3 of the chess team novellas.
Right.
I didn't mention those. There's 8 chess team novellas. And then the second one will be with Kane Gilmore, who was the co-author for Ragnarok. So the first one will be out in early summer, and that's actually a prequel, which kind of explains the origins of how the team came together. And then that one's called Prime. And then in the fall is Omega, and that may be the 5th and final book of the series. So next year we'll really be getting the beginning and the end of the team, of the story. So.
Yeah, and you know what I just realized? We kind of mentioned the Jack Sigler thrillers, but you want to kind of explain real quick just kind of a basic premise of what the books are about?
Jack Sigler is a Delta operative, or was in the first 3 books, and his team, it sounds a little nerdy, but they're called the chess team because their call signs are King, Queen, Bishop, Rook, and Knight. And they start out as Delta operators and eventually kind of get entangled in all these really weird situations where there's creatures created by genetics or creatures out of mythology. And so it's kind of like Indiana Jones with special ops and Ray Harryhausen at the helm.
Very cool. Anything you want to mention about the Jeremy Bishop books?
Jeremy Bishop.
Now that kind of the cat's out of the bag, do you feel that pseudonyms are really needed in kind of today's digital age?
For someone like me, they definitely are. And I imagine that I'll have another one someday, because I think it is possible to oversaturate the market for any one name. And I'm probably close to doing that for myself right now. With 3 books out in like a month, that's probably plenty. And so, you know, I won't be self-publishing any books until I think probably the beginning of next summer, just to give people a break and to leave space for the new Jeremy Bishop book and for Island 731. Because really, I want them all to do well. But yeah, I think Jeremy Bishop, there may be a Jeremy Knight coming up. And I'm using the chess team characters as my last name. So Jeremy Bishop is first, and then there'll be Jeremy Knight.
And then Jeremy Queen.
Yeah, I don't know about Jeremy Queen.
That could be for your...
I'm avoiding Jeremy King because people will think I did that on purpose to take advantage of the last name. But
you could do the Jeremy Queen for like your erotica.
I could. And that's tempting because those books sell like crazy.
There's good money in erotica too. So, man, we went over a lot of different stuff here. I don't know. Is there anything else you want to mention or talk about?
I don't know. There's so much. I have trouble keeping track of everything that I'm doing these days.
All right. Well, thanks for talking. It's been really good talking and finding out what's going on with you, and especially just kind of seeing where you're at in terms of self-publishing. Is, again, you were doing it before a lot of other people were doing it, especially back when they were telling you not to do it. You were kind of like, I'm going to do it anyway. Yeah.
People got really angry back then. And it was with my second book, with Raising the Past, when I released that, it was kind of an organized effort to make me fail, where overnight there would be a couple of one-star reviews posted and 52 people suddenly agreed that it was a helpful review. So there were some attempts back then to keep my self-publishing from working, but
oh my God,
it didn't work.
You know, I guess that's something actually we can talk about too. There seems to be, there's always clusters and little groups of self-published, I don't want to say exclusively self-published writers, but the whole thing, you know, when we talk about like the sock puppets and, you know, that whole thing. I mean, what are your thoughts on, is it just better just kind of do your own thing and not try to like, you know, play these really bullshit games?
Yeah, the bullshit is really annoying. And I think the people who focus on those things rather than the writing are the people who don't succeed. And they kind of just end up bitter and angry and telling me bad things on my blog. I actually just blocked someone yesterday for that. he was saying that I stole Project Nemesis from him.
From him?
Yes, from his Godzilla fan novel, which he changed the name of Godzilla to something else and kept King Kong, and yet somehow his main character was named John. He mentions Boston, and there was one other thing. Just totally random. So my main character is named John. My novel takes place in Boston. And then there was one other tiny coincidence like that, and he was telling me it was clear that I had stolen his idea.
How dare you, sir?
I know.
So
he was claiming copyright to the name John, basically.
Oh, my God. I know. I've been working on my Donald Trump fan fiction. It's coming together really nicely. Yeah, I actually did a blog post recently about entitlement, because I think that for some reason it seems like a lot of independent and self-published writers nowadays feel entitlement that they, because they're doing it, they are owed all these sales.
Yeah, and I think there's kind of always been an atmosphere of desperation for writers. And I understand it, because you're desperate to have a career doing what you love to do and you want people to take you seriously. But you kind of also have to pay your dues and allow people to criticize you and, you know, to not like you and to be okay when someone has an idea just like yours. Authors get upset really easily about all these things. And I don't think it serves them well, because especially now on the internet, all of that stuff is viewable for the public and for publishers. If I were a publisher, I'd, you know, look up everything I could about an author and what they're like to work with. And if you see an author just blasting people online, then you know that they're probably someone to avoid.
Right. All right. Well, this has been great. Thank you, Jeremy, for joining me today. Folks, I'm going to have a link here to Jeremy's website and to a couple of his books, because if I spent all day linking to every one of his books, I won't get any of my own work done. So make sure you definitely check them out, and also look for, like, what, Jeremy, you're going to have, like, what, 20 novels next year come out probably?
I'm trying to count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe?
7 novels. So, yes, definitely keep an eye on those. So thanks again, Jeremy. And, folks, I will talk to you later. Bye.